From the land of Grand Teutoburg City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 18th day of August 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. And we'll hear all about the agricultural weather, too. That with Mike Tenor from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Just a quick note, the commodity week comes up immediately after this program. We'll record it and then post it to our website at willag.org. Matt, along with Kurt Kimmel and Wayne Nelson, will join us. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agriculture, posted to the website by about 5 p.m. this evening, Thursday, and then airs tomorrow afternoon at 2:36.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, September corn at 3:32, a penny and three quarters higher, December up 2 1/4 at 3:42, March up 2, May up 2 3/4, July up 2 3/4, September soybeans a penny and three quarters higher, $10.32 1/4 the final trade, November a penny and a half lower, $10.14 1/2, January at $10.14 1/2, it was down 1, the March a half higher, May up 3/4, and July of next year, 1/4 cent higher. July soft red winter wheat at 483, a penny and a quarter higher. The hard red at 2 1/2 cents higher, finished 481 1/2. Live cattle futures in the August at 113.57 1/2, $1.17 1/2 lower. The October down 182 1/2 at 110.57 1/2, and September feeders at 142.95, down $1.97 1/2. Lean hogs in the October at $60.87 1/2, down 12 1/2 cents. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Are you still in the great state of Illinois?
No, I came down to Waco here a week ago. So I've been down south there for a week, and my dad's getting along just fine up in Illinois. So after spending most of the summer in Illinois, I had to come back where it's warmer. So that's where it's at.
Yeah, I bet you've got a bunch more heat down there than we have here. It's been really quite nice. I was out at Agronomy Day this morning, a really good crowd out there. We moved spaces, and actually it worked really well. And then Josh Whitman, who's the athletic director, showed up and talked to the crowd during the noon hour. Actually, fed that live on my Facebook page video, and then I've posted that into the website. So those who are interested in Josh Whitman and the athletics program here at Illinois can take a look and watch that. I think I saw that was about 28 minutes long. So he was there talking quite a bit about the program itself, and I enjoyed it. Maybe a few other folks will too. Okay, so turn your attention now, Dan, to what's happening in the marketplace. Producers are still concerned, and I think we're a little bedeviled by the idea that soybeans have managed to gain in the last week after USDA showed us such a big number for them. This despite the fact that we had really good exports to China the previous week. I'm wondering what you see there that either fundamentally or technically meant that that market should move higher.
Well, let's start with the fundamentals first, and then I kind of want to give you an overview of what I see in the technical side. I think fundamentally, the export book for both corn and soybeans is very, very strong for November forward. And I think end users, commercials, exporters have very little new crop ownership. I don't believe farmers sold very much inventory this past year. Corn prices never really got high enough for them to pull the trigger aggressively on any corn. Soybeans, a lot of the commercial grain companies that are in the market advisory business talk to farmers into selling $9 beans early. So then, you know, when the $10 beans were offered and $11 beans were offered, they weren't really in the mood to sell them after they got bad advice to start with at $9. So I think this is what you're going to see is that strong export demand, strong processor demand, very little end-user coverage on the books. Farmers are going to be tight holders of grain, at least initially. Harvest looks to be somewhat delayed. Everything's still fairly green up north. So I think you're going to see the market want to drift higher. I think you'll see strong basis levels, especially in the WILL listening area of Illinois and Indiana. I think Illinois is probably going to be in the best shape because it has both the river markets and strong processor demand. So I think basis levels in Illinois is going to be really strong. Southern Indiana, the basis levels will be strong because of export demand along the Ohio River, and very little bit on the book. So I do think fundamentally that is one of the reasons why the market has been able to climb out of its crop report lows and kind of climb higher, because there's just very little country movement going on at this time. And exporters and end users need to accumulate inventory to meet that demand that they've got on the books. Technically, several things I look at. The dollar. The dollar has broke real hard this month. It looks like we're going to close out the month lower. I look at the overall chart pattern of the dollar. I see a broadening top formation, and I think the dollar is getting ready to sink into a three-year cycle low during the first half of 2017. So I think we're going to see a dollar weakness over the next 6 to 12 months, and that is going to, I think, help us stay competitive in the world market. Another market that I'm looking at, since I'm from Texas, is crude oil. Crude oil has a head and shoulders bottom formation on the monthly chart, which implies that if we start getting some closes above, $50, all of a sudden the gates begin to open up for maybe a move into the up toward $80. Now, I don't know what the fundamental reason would be on that, other than it's got a nice head and shoulders bottom formation that does suggest a possible move to $80. And now on the dollar, I think if I'm correct on the dollar, if we do sink into a three-year cycle low during the first half of 2017, I think the downside objective would be to go down into the low 80s, which would be kind of back to where we were in the middle part of 2014. So I do think that could be very supportive to overall commodities, and that might be one of the reasons why oil is looking like it wants to move on up above 60, 70, maybe even $80. When I look at monthly soybeans, I know the month, we still have 10 trading days or so left of the month of August, but soybeans are now even for the month of August after taking out the July low after the August crop report. That is on a spot month, so we are in a position to have a monthly reversal to the upside on monthly soybeans. When you look at monthly November soybeans, they are actually ahead for the month, so we have a monthly reversal to the upside going there. Also, when you look at soybeans, they've been able to really, on a lead option basis, we're above our late July high point on the continuation on this weekly soybean. So it does look like a nice low has been formed in soybeans. Your technical indicators are rolling up, and it looks like soybeans are in position for a very strong retracement rally. Now, the first upside objective on near term would probably be about 1065. The next objective would be something up around 1120. When you take a look at the corn market, corn is basically even for the month on the monthly basis. After making the lowest low we've seen in some time, we took out that 14 low at 18 at 12. Your weekly indicators are turning up. Like I mentioned last week, it kind of looked to me like maybe what we posted here was a late 45-week type cycle low here after the August crop report. And it looks the way the corn market has performed, especially the way it closed today, it does look like that low may go down as something that we'll look at for a while. When you look at a December chart, we're breaking again, well above last week's high point on the December chart, and open interest is increasing, so it tells me that we've got new buying coming into the corn market on a rising market. So I think overall, technically, corn and soybeans are in very good positions to do some recovery of the loss that we've seen this summer. Now, I think seasonally, this is kind of typical. It's not uncommon for the market to post early October lows and then have a form of recovery going into late August, early September. And then when the combines start rolling, the seasonal tendency is very strong for the month of September to be down. Now, this is what's going to be key here, I think, as we go forward, is once September begins, does the market follow a seasonal pattern or does it turn counter-seasonal? And the counter-seasonal move, if it would turn counter-seasonal, that would tell you that the exporters, the end users are very, very short. They have no ownership, and they're going to have to come to the market one way, either through stronger basis levels or buying the futures to try to get some movement into the pipeline. That would be a very bullish scenario. Like I said, a couple of things that could help that out would be a late harvest. Another thing, the weaker dollar. But I do think that we are in position to maybe do a counter-seasonal move the way the market kind of has reformed technically, basically after last week's crop report, Todd.
All up, all done?
I think that's about all I got for now.
Hey, that's good enough. So technical position is good, demand-driven, correct?
Yes. It would be demand-driven because commercials and end users don't have the ownership they need to meet what they've sold on the books. And farmers are going to be relatively tight holders because of prices at current price levels.
All right. Thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate it.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting from Waco, Texas, joins us on this Thursday afternoon. Let's take a quick look at today's agricultural news. Representatives from Australia, Singapore, and other countries in the Far East and Pacific Rim are in Vietnam this week, negotiating a trade agreement that could potentially take the place of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement would exclude the U.S. and include China, which is currently not included in the TPP. Some of the member countries included in the TPP discussions are pushing ahead with the alternative agreement, as the fate of the TPP in America is certainly uncertain. There are reports that some experts are hoping news of these negotiations will spur the TPP discussion forward. Beijing is a key driver in discussions of the RCEP, that's RCEP agreement, which would include 16 nations and 3.4 billion people if it's ratified. If left out of the TPP, China would lose ground to manufacturing competitors like Vietnam, which would have greater duty-free access to the United States and other member nations. And the other item for the day, the Environmental Protection Agency released its draft report on ecological risk of atrazine in June of this year as part of its re-registration process with the herbicide. If the assessment recommendations are allowed to stand, farmers would essentially lose access to atrazine, and that would cost farmers a lot of money. The National Corn Growers Association says the EPA report could cost the industry $2.5 billion with a B in yield losses and increased production cost, all at a time when incomes are down sharply. A 2012 University of Chicago study showed that farming without atrazine would cost farmers an extra $59 an acre. That's a large boost in cost when farm incomes have dropped 55% in the past 2 years. A jump in cost that high would not only affect producers, but would have ramifications across the entire agribusiness industry. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. We'll record Commodity Week in just about 30 minutes at 3 o'clock Central Time and have it posted to our website, willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org, by about 5 o'clock this evening. Our panelists include Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Now let's take a look at the world of agricultural weather. We're joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate you taking the time for the day. Tell me about the rainfall that is in the offing for us, please.
Well, for the most part, the heaviest rainfall for the week has already happened. We saw a lot of rain earlier in the week across much of the Corn Belt and much of the Delta. Even though we do have more rain on the way, especially tomorrow and Saturday, total coverage and amounts won't be quite as high as what we've seen lately. We're generally looking for 4/10 of an inch of rain to 8/10 of an inch of rain across much of the central U.S., with higher totals generally limited to parts of the Delta. So the main point we're talking about right now is that there's more rain on the way, but it won't be quite as heavy as what we saw. So we don't think that flooding will be a significant issue in some of these areas that saw too much rain earlier in the week.
What's your assessment as the weather relates to the growing season for the rest of the month of August?
Well, there's not a real lot to be concerned with at the moment, and the main reason is because of a cool front that's coming through this weekend. We will see a very sharp temperature change from Friday through Saturday across the central U.S. High temperatures today, as you probably have noticed, have been a bit warm. 80s and 90s are common across the Midwest and across the plains, but that's all going to change. We'll see high temperatures only in the 70s later on this weekend and early next week, and minimum temperatures will fall into the 40s and 50s with the coldest weather across the northern plains. So that's a big change. But once we get into the middle of next week, we'll see a little bit of a warmer pattern redevelop. But the key word there is little. We don't think we're going to see any significant heat next week, and we think the temperatures, if anything, will only end up close to normal as we move through next week. So temperatures aren't going to be a real big issue here, Todd.
All in all, does it look as if August will be wet historically?
I think that's accurate, and primarily because of what's coming up later next week. Next week's forecast is a little bit tricky, as it always is 1 week out, but from what we can see right now, it looks like this warmer pattern that's going to occur will be accompanied by a few waves of energy. The real question with these waves is where will they originate from? There are some hints that most of them will develop from the northern Pacific Ocean, which is fairly typical of this time of the year. If that were to occur, we would just see scattered thunderstorms here and there. But there also are some hints that one of these waves may originate from the southern Pacific Ocean as a remnant of what will be a tropical storm or a hurricane later on this week and weekend. Now, if that were to occur, we would see a slug of heavy rain move through Texas and then eventually work its way into the western Corn Belt, including much of Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri. That's a possibility, but either way, we're looking for more rain across the western half of corn and soybeans next week. The only real question is, exactly how will it unfold? But we're pretty confident that one or the other scenario will happen, or maybe a combination of both.
Last week, Mike, you told us you were concerned about the northeastern corner of China, where about 45% of their soybean production takes place. It's been dry. Have they gotten any relief or rainfall?
They've seen a little bit of rain over the last week, so that's certainly some good news for them, but it hasn't been real heavy. But probably one thing to keep in mind is that the United States is expected to grow around 110 million metric tons of soybeans. China, on the other hand, is only expected to produce 12 million metric tons. So if we just take half of that, that's the area that's under concern. That would be about 6 million metric tons. Now, of course, they're going to produce some soybeans, so it's not like you're going to zero out the production numbers in this northern half of China's soybean region. And the point here is that even a big problem in China is only a small problem to supply worldwide. But of course, as you know, China is the biggest importer of soybeans. So that will be something to watch going forward. But just from a supply standpoint, They're a fairly minor producer, even though they are a big player in the soybean stage across the world.
Are there other places in the Northern Hemisphere growing regions that we need to be concerned about?
There are actually a few other areas. It's kind of interesting to see that the U.S. Seems to be having a very good to great growing season over the last 30 to 45 days with more nice weather coming up, while some of these other key grain and oilseed areas have some problems, especially for corn. The big problem for corn at the moment is what's happening from France through southern Europe and into Russia. A lot of these areas have been drier than normal for a while now, with parts of France even having experienced one of its driest periods since before 2000, dating to July 1st. That's according to the Speedwell Weather Index, which we like to look at. So France has been really dry here over the last 45 days with not much rain coming up. They are a key corn producer of Europe. More importantly is what's happening to the south and east. Southeast Europe, adjacent to the Black Sea and into Russia, have been much drier than normal over the last 30 days or so, more in Europe than in Russia. But all of these areas have been way warmer than normal. Dry and hot weather is redeveloping across these regions too, and we expect that to continue for at least 7 to 10 days. So corn is being pushed in Southeast Europe and Russia.
Thanks, Mike, for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome, Tom. I'll talk to you next week.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to the cash grain market. Matt Bennett is here from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, you've been traveling the last week or so. Where have you been across the Midwest?
Well, interestingly, the last 2 days I was in Ohio and then South Dakota. I'd say two of the more challenging areas of the main part of the Corn Belt. You know, I know they're not one of necessarily the top five states, but they definitely bring a lot of production. And so as far as corn goes, there's a lot of areas in northwestern and north central Ohio that are kind of in dire straits as far as the moisture situation. I think they've gotten enough to save the bean crop and probably could have pretty decent beans. They're not feeling too good about the corn crop. And then, South Dakota's hit and miss. You know, there's areas that are pretty decent farther east you go, but boy, you get west of Sioux Falls and it gets pretty sparse pretty quickly.
So you don't think either of them will hit USDA's goal?
At this point, based upon all the producers I talked to in the last 2 days, it sure be tough. And I talked to several agronomists as well, and they both states, they seem pretty skeptical that they would hit 163 or 147 this year by any stretch.
How bad is Ohio's crop?
In places, it's pretty rough. I talked to a producer in north central Ohio. He said he'd gotten 2.5 inches of rain since he planted his corn, and he figured that his beans were going to be, within maybe 10 to 15 bushel of his corn. So he didn't think his corn would make 100 bushel. And he said he thought there was about a 14, 15 county area that's going to be in a similar situation. So I do think parts of Ohio will still be awfully good where they got the rain, but I think you're going to have a big enough part of Ohio that's really going to struggle. It's going to be really tough to get to that maybe 160 even.
Earlier in this program, Dan Zwicker told us he thought the demand structure for corn and soybeans in the United States starting in November looked really good. What's your assessment?
Absolutely. I think that's a definite bright spot. You know, if I'd have told you a week ago on this show that we're going to have a 175 national yield and then rally corn and soybeans for the next few days, you probably would have thought I was crazy. And part of the reason that we've been able to do that is the demand structure is so good. For one, other things, probably everybody was leaning the wrong way. Or not the wrong way, but just too many people leaning bearish, and so you needed a super bearish report. Not a pretty bearish report, but we still were able to trend a little higher, and a lot of that's balanced on demand.
Does your travel the last 2 days suggest to you that the corn number USDA nationally at 175 was the biggest one we'll see?
My opinion is such, yes. I saw, I think, Dr. Good in Scott Irwin put out 73. And I would probably trend into that 172, 173. I think there's some areas that will be better than what people think. But there's still a lot of challenging areas. So getting to 175 national crops is probably going to be a tough row to hoe this year. Conversely, I'm not so sure the bean crop couldn't grow a shade. So, I could see maybe beans ended up approaching that 50 bushel national yield, especially with a decent chunk of the Midwest in the last week or so getting more than ample rain, which in the month of August, as you know, is quite important.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Don.
That's Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.